Stand by for the Terry Saul Show in 5, roll tape, 4, cue Terry, 3, bring audio up, 2, stand by, 1, play intro.
Stay tuned for the Terry Saul Show on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 FM and 1220 AM, KSLM. Today's show is being brought to you by the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler. The next time you plan an event, think of the Queen. And by the Lule Group, featuring Lule's Car Connection, Don Lule Homes, and Teresa Lule's State Farm Insurance.
Well, good morning, and welcome to the Terry Saul Show on Salem's original radio station. We are KSLM AM and FM. Today, our special guest is from the Kaiser Fire District, the head man himself, the fire chief, Jeff Cowan. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Hi, Terry. Thanks for having me on the Terry Saul Show.
And I'm so glad that you made it over here. You and I have a little bit of a history because we did something on stage a few years ago, an old Johnny Carson bit.
We did.
You wrote it, by the way, so if anybody didn't like it, it's your fault.
Yeah, but you played a great Ed McMahon.
That was fun.
That was a lot of fun. That was good.
We were doing something over at the Kaiser, was it the Irish Festival or something like that?
Yes. Yeah. We were on the stage. We did the halftime show or the lunchtime crowd.
Right.
That was a lot of fun.
I don't think anybody booed us, did they? There wasn't much people in the audience to boo us, but...
Well, like the Ed McMahon and Johnny Carson, if you remember, that they would often boo some of the jokes, but that was part of the stick, too. So
that was fun.
It turned out well.
Are you still doing stuff over there for the festival?
Irish Fest had to get canceled this year because of the coronavirus.
Yeah.
And each of those things for group gatherings because it was going to be too large. I'm sure that it's going to come back next year and bounce back,
yeah.
No problem.
Boy, they're canceling so many things, and you know, I keep my fingers crossed that the NFL will happen, but I don't know.
And baseball.
And baseball, there you go.
I'm looking forward to those things, too.
The Volcanoes, are they doing anything?
The Volcanoes have got a couple of things going on that they've been trying to do. They actually were trying to rent the stadium to have a group of gathering come stay at the stadium, come check it out. They had the club rooms that they had set up. You could spend the night in a Major League Baseball stadium. Really kind of exciting thing. Yeah, there was something. It's all in their marketing. And
what, sleep on like first base or something?
Well, not first base, but they have the team rooms set up and stuff like that. And then they've got the clubhouse suites up above.
Right.
And so it can be a real big family gathering and a party and each of the other things. I have to hand it. Our Volcanoes is an outstanding group. They do great marketing, all the other stuff. We're very proud of them.
I enjoy when they have the fireworks night because I live in Kaiser and we're not too far away. And so we just go out on the balcony at night and watch the fireworks. Enjoy it.
Great slice of Americana. The Volcanoes do a wonderful job. They haven't always been happy with me though. As the fire chief, there has been times when the fire conditions and public safety had to override the fireworks. If you're shooting them out over a field that's, you know, covered in grass, for example, we could have a fire and then access and water and all those other things. So
usually when I go see fireworks display, for some reason, somebody's little lawn catches on fire or somebody's field will start a fire. Isn't that pretty much normal with fireworks, though?
You know, you're talking to the wrong guy about fireworks. I got to tell you that if there's anything I've ever thought that we'd like to change in the fire service, you light fire to something and you set off a rocket and it goes every which way, everything like that. It's just a hazard or danger. And
you have no control over it.
Not only
once it goes, it's going.
I was a paramedic first, and I have so many bad stories with fireworks. We're coming into fireworks season. We live in a region that allows you to go to, say, Washington State, go up there and purchase fireworks, rockets, mortars, bazookas. Those are not exaggerations on my part.
Really?
No, honestly, when I was in Seattle, that was a big issue. And the 4th of July and the week before and even a week after. Then they opened the law up and they actually made it available for January 1st for New Year's. My own neighborhood, and I live in Kaiser, of course, my own neighborhood turns into a war zone during that time. I've fought fires. I've transported emergency injuries. Eyes, fingers, people that have been badly burned, house fires. You can imagine that I am not pro fireworks by any shape or form.
And you know, I never thought about that. I've got the fire chief sitting in here, and I'm talking about, let's have some fireworks display on. I'm from California, and down there, they're illegal. You can't have them anywhere down there.
Absolutely. So what's your solution, chief? Well, you know, leave it to the professionals. They've got professional sky displays. Those people do it for a living. They've got them set up with all the safety in mind. They've got, you know, the right zone, the right region, the right precaution in the right area. You know, those kinds of things that will keep everybody safe, and then we can all enjoy them. Plus, it's a bigger display and something professional that we can all enjoy.
Chief, let's go back to the beginning there. How did you get started? You're a paramedic, you said, originally. Is that where you got your start?
It is, actually. And so my story, I'm a local kid. I grew up here in Milwaukee. I went to Rex Putnam High School. And I graduated from high school, and I went right to school at Clackamas Community College. I took EMT training, and I became an EMT in 1981. And I got hired on St. Patrick's Day in 1981 by Willamette Falls Ambulance out of Oregon City.
Are they still in existence? I don't think I've heard of them.
Well, the history of them, Willamette Falls Ambulance, they bought Buck Ambulance Service.
And then Buck
Ambulance Service later on got purchased by AMR. And I know you've seen AMR ambulances around. And there was some progression to that. So I was a paramedic in Portland for 5 years. And then in...
Let me interrupt you right there.
Sure.
My son's a paramedic in Portland right now.
Yes.
He said it's a zoo. Was it a zoo back then?
It was, but for different reasons. We went through public unrest and public protest at that time for the same reasons, for racial riots and things along that line.
So when they're having a riot, and this is what scares the hell out of me about my son up there, is if they're having a riot and somebody gets hurt, are they sending you in there?
No. What happens in our situation, consider it like this. We've got a situation that technically is a dangerous, hazardous situation. A lot of people would say like a war zone. There's shooting, there's fighting, all the other stuff. We're not armed. We're not protected. The firefighters and the paramedics, people on the ambulance and the fire trucks. And so consequently, it's like one big domestic violence call. Mom and dad are fighting. Things are out of control. Things are being thrown. Guns, knives, all the other things. So it's not a safe situation. So the best way for us is what we call stage. We park in a safe zone very nearby so that as soon as the opportunity is under control, we can rush in and go help everybody or have somebody who the injured be brought out to our location, and we can provide emergency care there. The hard part is when somebody sets fire to something in that situation. How do you rush in and try to put out the fire? And what do you have somebody provide suppressing fire while you're trying to suppress the fire?
Mm-hmm.
Those kinds of things. So, no, that has not worked well for us, and it's difficult.
And I'm going to ask you about some of the different techniques for dealing with that here in a little bit there. Back to where you got your start. So you were a paramedic?
I was. And, really lucky. I went to the University of Oregon, which is now Oregon Health Sciences University up on Pill Hill in Portland, and got my paramedic
Pill Hill. What is Pill Hill?
Pill Hill, where the Veterans Hospital is and OHSU is and all of those.
You call it Pill Hill.
Yeah, that was a favorite term back in the day.
I'm going to remember that one, Pill Hill.
1984, I went to Seattle up in the Kitsap County area, and I worked up there for 23 years in Washington State. I was a paramedic. I was a lieutenant. I was a captain. I was a battalion chief. I was the operations chief. I was assistant chief. And then
just couldn't hold a job, could you?
I couldn't. And for some reason, the Peter principle, if you're bad at something, they promote you.
There you go.
That's the one. So then in 2008, the opportunity for the fire chief spot opened up here in Oregon. And
Kaiser?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And came down here to Kaiser, competed for the position, and I was selected. And I've been very, very fortunate. I've been a Kaiser fire chief since 2008. I'm still a licensed paramedic.
And do you go out on calls?
I do. I go on what's called a multi-company or large events.
You know that's got to intimidate the guys. When they're sitting there working on something, all of a sudden, oh, no, here comes the chief.
Well, they do exactly that. I was going to tell that story. If the crew's there working and stuff like that, nobody's looking, I come walking up, and one of the guys will say, "Hi, chief," kind of really loud so everybody knows.
So everybody knows. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're subtle.
Mm-hmm. And that's when they think, okay, now he's got to get out of here.
Yeah.
So you've been the fire chief there. What are your duties? What do you do?
Well, honestly, it's still evolving. Right up to last year, I was still responding to emergencies, and I was in the duty rotation where you're in charge if we get a big fire, car crashes, multi-company responses where you get lots of fire trucks, things along that line. And what we do is now we have instead of having a chief on call, we have a chief on duty. So we have a chief on duty 24 hours a day, and I'm no longer in that 24-hour-a-day rotation. What's interesting about that is I was kind of bemoaning that, GM don't respond to fires anymore. And one of my firefighters asked me about that. And he said, Chief, are you responding now? How are you liking not being in the response? And I said, you know, I was about to tell that whole story. You know, well, I started out a fire chief and I started out as a paramedic. Responding is part of my job, doing all those things. And now I'm not responding anymore. And he says, now you can respond anytime you want. It was like somebody flipped a switch. Oh, yeah. So I can respond anytime I want. And so I go to car crashes and larger events, larger fires. I go and support the crew. They've got a plan. But while they're fighting the fire and they're focusing on that, we run 15 calls a day. If they're busy fighting the fire and all the resources are tied up fighting that event, we're still going to have EMS calls, perhaps another fire, perhaps a car crash, while those events are going on. And so you need another chief to come in and manage things while they're busy fighting the fire.
So how many chiefs do you have on duty? Right now, how many chiefs are out there right now?
There's one duty chief on duty at Kaiser Fire District 24 hours a day, seven days a week. That chief on today is Chief Brian Butler. He's our operations chief. I have a chief in charge of training, and we have a chief in charge of facilities and maintenance vehicles, all of those other things. And then I'm the Kaiser Fire Chief, so I'm over all of them.
So that means you're responsible for everything that goes on.
I am. And so I work directly for a 5-member board of directors. They're elected by the public. We're a fire district like a school district or a library district. We're our own junior taxing agency. We're not part of the state. We're not part of the city. We are a standalone agency. And so we cover a zone.
How many facilities do you have? Is it just the one over there off of by the Safeway there?
Shemawa and River Road is that location across from Safeway.
Do you have any other ones that you have?
No. What's interesting about Kaiser is we have one headquarters station, and Kaiser's beautiful. It's 10 square miles, and the fire station is right smack dab in the middle of it.
Okay.
We get to somebody's emergency in under 4 to 6 minutes, over 95% of the time. We've got a great service, a great rotation that we do. I'm the luckiest fire chief there is, Terry. I'm going to say that a lot, but I'm just giving you examples why.
The other day, we had an issue going across the street in the apartment complex across the street from me, where the elderly woman was having an issue. The paramedics showed up, but also, I call them a fire engine from back in the old days.
Right.
They showed up too, and I thought, now, why do you have to have so many people there?
Yeah, it's a great example. I get asked that question a lot. The ambulance comes, or the medic unit with paramedics on. They come.
There's usually two of them?
There's usually two vehicles going to the scene. It's all about people. How many people are you going to have handle your emergency? Let's say it's a cardiac emergency. You're having a heart attack.
Okay.
You get the ambulance arrive. They're there. Two people on the ambulance. They get there. One paramedic is starting to set up the IV, the EKG, and all the emergency oxygen and other thing. The other paramedic is interviewing the person who's ill. In the meantime, we've got to carry that person out the door. We've got to move equipment, everything else. The second vehicle is your manpower
group.
Yeah, so now you got six people at the scene. That's ideal in that kind of emergency, because now you got somebody moving the gurney, you got somebody carrying the boxes, you got somebody moving the equipment, and load the patient and carry them out to the ambulance and move them in an efficient manner. And what if they're critically ill? So now you got to have somebody breathe for them and maybe start extra procedures and then move them into the ambulance. So you might have four people working in the back of that ambulance to keep someone alive on the way to the hospital.
Didn't think about it that way. That they're there for the manpower then.
Yes, absolutely. We call it the racetrack analogy. If you have the racetrack driver driving around the speedway, you know, when they pull over and somebody runs out and they change the tires and they fill up and they make sure everything's working and then zoom they off the way they go. Well, the engine company, those four people on the engine, they're the pit crew. They go from call to call as the pit crew. The ambulance comes in, they pull in. In this case, the race car driver is the person who's ill. They pull in, the ambulance comes in, starts working on the patient, and stays with them. The pit crew comes in, does the chart, the emergency oxygen, EKG, all the other things that we need to do, and moves them onto the gurney and moves them into the back of the ambulance, and off they go.
Who's in charge? Something like that. Who is in charge? You're not sending your duty chief out for that, are you?
No, that's not typically a duty chief.
So
call.
Who's in charge out there?
Well, we call it a POC, person in charge, and of that person in charge.
Shouldn't that be a PIC?
It would be. I didn't spell it right. That's probably why. Thank you, Rex Putnam. If I went through and put that together, the person in charge would go through and they will The lead paramedic in that particular case is making the calls. But, you know, when you're there, there's typically four paramedics all together working. So there's a captain on the engine, and the captain is in charge of the overall scene. The person in charge is in charge of that patient care, and he's the paramedic. She or she is the paramedic in charge of that patient care in that case.
The paramedic in the actual ambulance is the one that's really calling the shots then at that point?
The paramedic in charge of patient care.
Okay, we only have about 45 seconds left here on this one. We'll probably get into it on the next one. But what is the difference between an EMT and a paramedic?
An EMT goes to school for one or two college terms. A paramedic has a two-year degree in emergency medicine. So they have an associate's degree in emergency medicine.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, more with today's special guest. You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on 104.3 FM, 1220 AM, KSLM.
We're back in 5, 4, cue Terry, 2, 1, you're on.
Welcome back to the Terry Saul Weekend Show. Today's special guest is Kaiser Fire Chief Jeff Cowan. And when we were talking last, we were talking a little bit about your job as fire chief for the Kaiser Fire District. Do you actually go out and recruit the firefighters and the paramedics?
Hector Blanco is in charge of our recruitment and retention of our members. We also have Brian Butler in charge of maintaining our paramedic hiring list. We're a civil service organization, so we have to go through a hiring list through the civil service process. We have to establish a list. We advertise for eligible candidates. Candidates come in and apply. Then they have to go through a selection process. It's competitive selection process. Then that determines your placement on the list. I'm the number one candidate based on my credentials, my testing ability, and my experience. All of those things are weighted. So once your name is on the list and you're number one, it's really likely that all of the people on our list get hired because they're all highly qualified, talented people with a bright future. And then I have all of my administration, what I call my senior staff. I have Ryan Russell in there as our division chief in charge of the facilities. And when you're talking about a multi-million dollar facility, that's not a small job, and a multi-million dollar fleet. What does the fire chief do? I've got a little bit of everything in there, and it's my job to make sure my people get everything they need to do their job. The board of directors, starting there, they're elected officials elected by the community at large. We have a 5-member board of directors, and their main job is to approve the budget, so they have a fiduciary responsibility. They have to set policy for the fire district, and then they hire and fire the fire chief. I'm the only employee for the board of directors. From there, the fire chief's job is to go through and put together a program that is efficient and meets the needs of the community. And so that's my job as the executive officer of the Kaiser Fire District. So I have budget, I have HR, I have administration, you know, payroll. We have to pay bills. You know, we've got fuel costs, we've got electrical bills, we've got to take care of water and sewer just like everybody else does. We've got personnel that are just outstanding, and they need help and support in order to do their jobs. So we've got decisions for spending and purchasing. How do we stay efficient? How do we stay on top of it? You know, the cutting edge, EMS and emergency medical, and we have fires. So all of those things occur. The fire chief is responsible for each of those things, and I am surrounded by some really talented people that keep me on track and keep our program on track for Kaiser Fire District. Now, I am really proud and expert at Kaiser Fire District, but I know that Salem has this as well. Portland has this as well. Sarah Boone is the fire chief in Portland, and Mike Niblock is the fire chief in Salem. We meet on a regular basis a couple times a year to get together and compare notes. How are you guys doing? What's going well? What's not going so well? What do we need to work on?
If Kaiser has something going on that is, I don't want to say out of control, but out of control. It's just a huge out of control. Will you call in Salem and say, hey, we could use some help here? Or is there a certain amount of we don't need any help?
Yes, that's a great example. We call that mutual aid. If you have an emergency, I'll come help you. If I have an emergency, you come help me. And it's automatic. If Kaiser Fire has a big event, Salem will automatically come to Kaiser and come help them. The same is true for Kaiser Resources going to Salem. As a matter of fact, those partnerships are vital. And that's another role of mine, is that interagency affiliations and how to work on those intergovernment relationships and agreements that we have. For example, we bought a used ladder truck from the city of Salem. That used ladder truck was 18 years old, We refurbished it. A brand new ladder truck costs about $1.7 million.
Ouch.
And so instead of $1.7 million, we paid about half of that and refurbished this older truck. And it's a great truck. And so it's heavy duty. It's high angle. It's 110 foot. It's a platform aerial. All the other things that are excited about for firefighters. This great fire truck is all set up and ready to go. Salem has two of these. We have one. Well, you got to maintain them. So what if your fire truck's out of service and you got to go through and repair it or test it or maintain it or change the oil? Well, then there's three ladder trucks in the Salem area, not just two. And so if Kaiser needed a ladder truck, they're going to come. If Salem needs us to come, we're going to go to Salem. Medic units are the most interchangeable units in the entire county and our zone. And so Polk County, Marion County, Linn County, all of these other places, the mutual aid, those medic units, if you call for paramedics, they're going to go wherever they're needed to go.
You were talking just a minute ago about how you guys work together through the different agencies. There's something about firefighters. There's a brother or sisterhood, whatever you want to call it, but they have each other's back, don't they?
They do. It's a fellowship. It's more than that. It's like family. We take good care of each other because we all have the same desires in mind. It's not just a job. It's not just a career. It's a vocation. It's a calling. Yeah. The average person can't look at this and say, I'm going to do this part-time. I'm going to do this as a hobby. I'm only going to do it because of the pay and benefits. The average person, you can't keep up. If you're a paramedic, it's got to be your love and your passion because you have to eat, sleep, and drink it.
My son started as a firefighter with Silverton. They would have these burn-to-learn things where they would literally set a house on fire and go in there and put it out. And I remember we were down there watching, my wife and I, and he was the first one going in there. And I'm thinking to myself, why is my son going into that burning building? Come back, Ryan. Don't go in there. But it's the guys that are right there with him. And they're watching each other's back. And a cute little story is that years ago, he fell through a porch and messed up his foot. And they called me, and I was just getting ready to go on do my stand-up comedy down in Medford. And I was literally just getting ready to go on stage, and my phone's ringing, and it's, you know, my son. I go, why is he calling me? He knows I got a show right now. I go, what is this, son? He goes, this is the captain of whoever the agency was, and says, just want to let you know that Ryan fell. He's okay, but he messed up his foot a little bit. And I'm, okay, now I got to go on stage and be funny. All right, but I knocked it out. Shot back up there, and the thing that I'll never forget, Chief, is that when we walked into the emergency room, there was about 15 or so firefighters in there. And of course, you're getting scared because you're going, why are they all here? That's just what they do. They just show up. They're there for each other. Do you find that a lot with Kaiser or with all of the firefighters? They've got each other's back.
Absolutely. The camaraderie and the teamwork is something you just don't get to see in a lot of other careers. You live with these people and you're running calls and you're in the worst of circumstances, all of the other things. And so it's stress and it's pressure. So we move as a team and move as a unit because that support is what helps on each of our cases.
How many people are on your staff?
I've got in mine every day, 24 hours, a minimum of 10 personnel on duty for emergency response.
Okay. Plus the and divide that up for me. That's how many on the paramedic and then how many on the actual fire apparatus?
All of our people are what are called dual role.
And so they can do both.
Yeah, exactly.
Really?
Our paramedic firefighter or EMT firefighter, all of our people are dual role because we run an ambulance business. And we're a fire department. We can get into some statistics, and I'll show you that example.
Is that pretty much normal, though? Most agencies are like that? Paramedics and firefighters are all the same?
No, not all agencies use our model.
Chief, we need to take a short break. When we come back, more with today's special guest.
We're back in 5, 4, Q-Terry, 2, 1, you're on.
Today, we're talking with the Kaiser Fire District Fire Chief, Jeff Cowan. How many people are on your staff?
On my staff, there's myself and my office administrator. I've got a deputy chief who is retired. He runs my ambulance billing for that. We have an IT for our information technology, so our computer technology. So my administrative staff, there are five of us. I have two prevention personnel. I have Captain Anne-Marie Storms, and I've got Cody Height, who is my inspector, public education specialist, and the rest of my personnel are assigned a shift. So, for example, Operations Chief Brian Butler is the Operations Chief, his Captain Rachel Brozovich, and then a Lieutenant, and then we go to the firefighters are on. So that makeup of today's shift with Chief Butler on duty, there's 10 people. On top of that, that's our career lineup staff, and then we've got, you know, Chief Ryan Russell and his staff and his Captain, his Lieutenant, and all those 10 people. Then you have Chief Hector Blanco and his Captain and his staff, his people. So they're divided up into three shifts. We work one day on and 2 days off. So 24 hours on, 48 hours off.
Well, now that sounds sweet until all of a sudden you're going call after call after call all night long.
Exactly.
And then it's like, well, when do we sleep?
Yes, and they may not. And so it's not likely because we run 15 calls a day in Kaiser. And so 5,600 calls a year in round numbers and 15 calls a day. So when you look at that, but how many of those calls are fire and how many of those calls are EMS? Now, that's an interesting point. Our calls, our fire calls, how many structure fire, run the fire truck out there, pull the hose, spray water, put the fire out. How many of those calls do you hear? In the last 10 years, that average is about 70. 70. So one call every 4 days or so is going to be a fire call, pull hose, squirt water, put the fire out. Now that could be a residential fire, it could be a dumpster fire, it could be a car fire, or it could be a commercial structure fire. You just never know. And here's the other thing, they're random. You never know when the call is going to happen. You never know when the fire call is going to happen. And so one of my things for the public, and I appreciate if the public could do this right away, if you people would schedule your emergencies and your fires, I could make sure that I get the right response every single time.
Yeah, not a problem.
I'd put all my people in ducks in a row. We put the fire out and we could all go home. But that's not what's going to happen. The next thing we do is you think about that. Okay, so 70 calls a year are going to be fire calls. In the meantime, we're going to have 5,130 EMS calls. That means 15 calls today are going to be EMS calls. Emergency medicine, diabetic, respiratory distress, cardiac emergency, I've fallen, I can't get up. Each of those emergency medical calls are going to happen 15 times a day.
Okay, wait, let me interrupt you right there, Chief. 15 calls a day, but what happens when the call comes and you guys are out there working on it? Well, the other call's not going to wait until he's done, right?
Exactly.
Do you have multiple units that can respond to this?
We do. That's when we talked about earlier, when we were talking about why does an ambulance and a fire truck go to the call? Well, an ambulance and a fire truck can handle a lot of immediate emergencies. They're okay. Like a little task force. You can send them to a fire call. You can send them to a car crash. You can send them to a medical emergency, and they can handle each one of those. And so as a matter of fact, on duty in Kaiser today, there are three staffed ambulance, an engine company, a duty chief, and we also staff a rescue because we've also got volunteer firefighters. We're a combination department. So I've got student firefighters. And I've got the volunteer firefighters that are our community-based fire volunteers that come in and respond with Kaiser Fire District. So we have a variety of programs to maintain the staffing in the station. So our station staffing can get up to 15, but we try to keep it right at 10 at minimum.
So right now you have three different ambulance services set up?
Three ambulance units ready to respond.
So how many different rigs do you have in there?
And so it depends. If we've got four fire engines, we've got five ambulances, we've got a rescue unit, we've got a ladder truck, we have two command vehicles. I have a car. You know, those kinds of things. The inspector needs a vehicle so that they can get around and respond and do inspections. We have to have a fleet that's ready to go. Remember, I mentioned Chief Ryan Russell has to maintain and keep that program and that fleet operational and ready to go. Plus, you've got a facility that's a $6 million facility. It's got to have heating and air conditioning and water, power, and all those other things maintained. Right now, as you speak, if you were to walk through Kaiser Fire District, you'd be seeing all the firefighters painting, and they're literally painting the entire downstairs floor. It's a two-story building. I've never seen firefighters as committed and dedicated as you have in Kaiser, that their commitment to everything that we do. I mentioned before, I'm the luckiest fire chief there is.
They're proud of their department.
They're
proud of what they do.
Pride and ownership is a key value, and if you have that value instilled in your organization, you can't buy that.
So I'd hate to be the person that has to fit all these guys and gals and their uniforms and stuff. There's a lot of equipment that you have to have in that that facility.
Absolutely. We're a lot like a military. We use military terms. We use battalions and chiefs and all the other things that are on there. We have a quartermaster. We have a quartermaster in charge of uniforms. You know, Bill Herring has been with us for 20 years with our district. He does a great job. He's one of our excellent firefighters that's out there. And these are folks, not just the fact that everybody's from somewhere else. These are folks that grew up in Kaiser and started out as an explorer like Billy Herring. Started out as an explorer, like a Boy Scout program that's for men and women that start out and they come in and they learn first aid, CPR, ropes and knots, an explorer program. And then when they graduate from high school and they turn 18, they become a volunteer firefighter and they respond to emergencies. And then they go to school for EMT and firefighting and they get certified in those kinds of things. And then Bill was a volunteer with us. Gosh, I think it's 10 years. Forgive me, Bill, if I get that wrong. And he was a volunteer with us for 10 years and we had a hiring process and Bill competed and he came out number one and we picked him up. And I've got several members like that. Randy Jackson, our deputy chief, just celebrated 30 years with Kaiser Fire District, started out as a community volunteer, became a career member, was a captain, director, deputy chief. As he came out, now he runs our ambulance billing manager for that. And as a retirement, he comes back and works as a contract employee. He's doing a great job for us.
Do you do a lot of continuous training for your staff? I don't mean your administrative staff. I'm talking about the men and women that are out there actually spraying the water on the fires.
So much so that we went out and got the best training chief I've ever heard of or met. His name is Hector Blanco. We stole him.
Why does that name sound familiar?
Hector Blanco is a tremendous individual, very professional. He's been with our agency for a dozen years. We hired him out of Nevada. He was with the Nevada State Fire Marshal's Office. He is our chief in charge of training. So he goes through and he does recruitment and retention. I mentioned him earlier. Also, on top of that, if you think about training, we got training in every single aspect. So you've got personnel training. How do you train your people and workplace employee behavior, professional behavior, personnel development? How do I build my career? How do I develop better my computer skills, for example? How do I use better software? Each of those things. So you've got employee and personnel training. You've also got firefighter training. You've got to keep up on every aspect of how the fire engine works, pumping water, pulling hose, throwing ladders, how to forcible entry, how do I get into this door, how do I fight this type of fire, tactics and all that.
Does everybody on the rig have their own certain job that they do? If you pull up to a house fire and the guys jump off, they don't ride on the back anymore, do they? Remember those days where they would ride on the back?
I do, actually. There's not a lot of us chiefs that
You're
are
not
left.
That old. You can't remember those days.
You know, if you thought about it and you did the math from 1981, that's 39 years, buddy. And yeah, when I first started out, we were still riding on the tailboard. We did that and it was crazy. It was stupid then. It's stupid now.
How many people fell off of that?
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Stupid then, stupid now.
It looks pretty impressive, though. But if they stay on.
That's not the word I use when I see it, but impressive wasn't what I was thinking.
If you pull up to a house fire, does everybody on that rig have a certain job that they do? This one pulls the hose out and this one hooks it up or whatever. What are the different jobs that they do when they pull up?
What's amazing is all my people are dual role. You know, when we were talking about training earlier, I just talked about fire training. Don't forget the paramedics have continuing education and emergency medicine training. So they have to keep their certifications and their licenses, continuing education and their process are there. All of my people are dual role. For example, they are firefighter and EMT, firefighter and paramedic. So you say, So when they respond to a car crash, they can remove the patient, they can cut the car in half, they can rip the doors off, they can do whatever else to get to access to the victim inside the car. The paramedics and EMTs can provide emergency first aid. Meanwhile, the firefighters are there also protecting it in case, what if the car catches on fire? All of those things have to have dual role. So today, as a firefighter paramedic, you might be driving the medic unit, you might be riding in the back of the medic unit, you might be on the fire engine. You might be driving the fire engine. Having those multi-roles filled with all of our personnel, that versatility of each of those people is very effective in keeping us afloat because we can respond to any all emergencies with the same people. I don't have to have three different people to do the job. I don't have to have a firefighter and a paramedic and an HR person doing inspections. They're all qualified in those deals.
What is the, without getting too morbid with the details, what's the worst call you've had, you yourself have gone out on?
Terry, people will ask me that question. I have top 10 lists in each category.
Okay.
Obviously, every person I've ever met in my career is anything that involved children. I've had tragic circumstances with children. The worst thing I could ever point out to you is that it was the hardest growth step in my career is that bad things happen to good people in the most tragic of circumstances, and there was nothing anybody could do. People will ask me, you know, Chief, do you ever have any post-traumatic stress from these bad calls? Obviously, I have nightmares that are from these tragic circumstances. Of course I do. I'd be inhuman not to. However, in each of those categories, me and the people that responded were all together to help. We were all there. We were all given the resources that we needed, and we did the best that we could. Sometimes we were successful. Sometimes we weren't.
Okay, Chief, you have three children, right?
I do.
Three
I have
kids.
Three sons.
How old are they?
30, 24, and 21.
Okay, so they're adults now.
They are.
When you have a situation there where you just got through saying where a child is either injured or passes away, how do you walk away from that? How do you walk away? And you have to be thinking about it. You're a dad. You've got to be thinking about how do you walk away from that?
Absolutely. It made it worse when I was a father because then you see your own kids.
Exactly.
All of those things are all part of that. We've had tragic circumstances in Kaiser. We've had children die in Kaiser from fire. We've had children die in Kaiser being struck by a car while crossing River Road. In those circumstances, they're the worst. And so you do everything you can to prevent them, everything you can to educate the public of how to stay safe, and then provide the best service you can. Because honestly, when the emergency happens, how can you have second best or low bidder EMS that's going to respond to your emergency? We have to provide the best we can.
Do you have any kind of counseling for the paramedics or the firefighters when they come back into the station and say, hey, it's okay to lay your head down there and talk about it?
Absolutely. You know, there's post-instrument traumatic stress injury that we're changing because we're not calling it a disorder anymore because we're calling it post-traumatic stress injury because it was a bad circumstance. So we get together and we diffuse each call. Hey, let's talk about that call. We get together after the call and do the post-incident analysis is what a scientific review would be. But let's talk about how we feel. And you're there as part of a team, so you have the team support. We also have formal methods where we can get together and do counseling and things like that. And we have an employee assistance program that's professional people that deal with emergency responders.
We need to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. Back.
You're listening to The Terry Saul Show on KSLM AM and FM. Brought to you today by the Lule Group and the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler.
We are back with our final few minutes of today's show. Our guest has been the Kaiser Fire District Chief, Captain Jeff Cowan. Not too long ago, actually it was quite a while ago, I was on tour with Glenn Yarborough. And there's a name that goes back a long time ago. And we were doing a show in Paradise, California, at the theater there in Paradise. Beautiful little theater there. We were out of there and all of a sudden the city burned down. You were actually there, weren't you?
You asked me about the worst cases I've seen, and you know, we talk about the top 10 list. The worst fires I've ever seen started in November 2018, the Paradise Fire, also known as the Camp Fire.
How'd that start?
That fire started from the PG&E folks, the electrical outlet that provided the services, electrical service to the area. Matter of fact, yesterday, they just accepted responsibility for unintentional manslaughter for the state of California by the fire that was caused by the electrical provider.
How many people died in that fire?
That's a number we're never going to be known because there was declared 1,000 people missing. The problem was is that of those people missing, I think that number right now is listed as 88. We think that there's still 100 people left unfound. And of that number may be 50. It could be 100. It's tragic of the most numbers of any of those. But how did we come up with that number, 1,000 initially? You have people and you have an address and they fled the area. You don't have any follow-up. You don't have any contact with those people. We know how many people lived in the area before that, but now we have to try and account for them.
So maybe, what happened?
The conditions were bad. The conditions of the fire season were bad. The area was dry. And a lot of this has to do with fire prevention that I mentioned to you earlier. Paradise, California is a town of 20-some thousand people, 24,000 people. And
located where? Just north of Sacramento? Sacramento,
in a canyon in north of Sacramento, outside of Chico, California. Oroville is in the area also. They live in a canyon, and the canyon works as against us in our fire flow because the conditions are dry, it's hot, heavy wind comes through at some 60 miles an hour.
Is that your worst enemy, those heavy winds?
Heavy winds, fire conditions, temperature, weather. This is an outdoor wildland fire. They're out of control. This fire burned so intense that it destroyed 11,000 structures. It just devastated the entire
town. How long did the fire last?
The fire burned for 7 days. California asked for mutual aid to Nevada, Texas, Oregon, Washington. Kaiser Fire District sent a crew to Paradise, California. They were down there for a week to help fight fire.
Wow.
I went down. There's what's called when you have a national FEMA level event, a large scale event like this, we have what's called a Type 2 overhead incident management team set up with FEMA. I have friends that served on that team. I went down there with them, and I was there for a week at that event.
What was your role down there?
My role actually turned out to be, they had people that were in charge of logistics. So these people are operations. These are firefighters. You put out the fire. You bring in the helicopter or suppression team. You do the people evacuation. You do law enforcement and security. My role was actually a support role. That is Cowtown. And that area has cattle. It has livestock. It has sheep and horses and all those other things. And those all have now had their area destroyed. So they don't have pens anymore. They don't have feed anymore. All those other things. We set up 3 separate locations in the fairgrounds of those areas while we were down there of that process. That was all part of the livestock, how to feed them. So logistics team and everything. I have friends and people down there. Corey Hanye, who is the sheriff of Butte County, where Paradise is. All of those people are friends. I got an up close, in personal demonstration of all the things that were going on and the level of the prevention that needed to be done, the level of emergency, the community outpouring of support, the donation of food and shelter and clothing for people that were had to evacuate. It made me a better fire chief, Terry.
Did you see a lot of stuff that you just wish you hadn't seen?
Absolutely. The circumstances were the most tragic. The circumstances were things that no one has ever seen. It burned 11,000 homes. It's the biggest fire in California history. California is not a small economy.
Right.
And so it's their biggest fire yet. Then the loss of life is the biggest area.
What is in Paradise today?
The area is actually rebuilding. I couldn't be more inspired by the community and their resiliency that says, we're coming back and we're going to build our home and we're going to renew. What I like is that the new plan is to prevent this kind of thing from happening before. They call it Paradise, California, but remember, it's somewhat of a misnomer. It's a nice, warm area. It's up in the forest area. They've got lots that are close together, what I call postage stamp size lots. You go park your RV up there and you got your fifth wheel, maybe your single wide trailer, and you build a shed next to it. And your shed is next to the neighbor's shed, and they're underneath the trees, and the fire hazards are there, and they're not spread out, and the access roads aren't there, and there's not enough water supply, and there's not enough hydrants, all those other things, evacuation routes. It was a dangerous situation for fire conditions, and they knew that.
We're running a little bit low on time here, so I'm going to change the subject here, even though I could ask you more questions about that. Let's talk about the current issues that's going on right now, this COVID-19. Are you seeing a lot of that in Kaiser right now? And if so, what are the precautions your people are doing if they have to transport somebody that may have COVID-19?
You're safer at home. And by safer at home, I mean it's still important that you limit your public contacts, limit your exposure. This illness is still alive. It's still in our community, and it's still being transmitted, and you can watch the daily reports in the news just like I do. So I don't have a secret code of information that no one else has. So by keeping informed on this virus and staying safer at home and wash your hands, limit your public contacts is your safest way in order to protect yourself from this virus. Later on, we're going to come up with a vaccine. Dr. Fauci, as I talked about, a vaccine in early of 2021. And so I'm hopeful for that. What my people are doing is we're assuming everybody has this virus because you can have the virus, be carrying the virus, and not even know you have it. We have to protect our crew because if our crews get sick or if they get quarantined because of exposure, we had an entire crew be quarantined for 14 days because early on, we transported the second patient in Oregon at Kaiser Fire District. And when we transported that patient, the call came in as a pneumonia patient. He'd been seen by the doctor, diagnosed as pneumonia. That patient was there. Our crew went in, transported that patient. They put a mask on the patient, for example. They did everything right. Later on, we found out 6 days later, the patient patient had the coronavirus, COVID-19, which is the complications of the coronavirus. And so we had to quarantine six of our personnel. That's a really difficult situation. If you take out six personnel, almost an entire shift of my crew, other crews have to work twice as much. So yes, we're transporting coronavirus patients right now. We're transporting patients with COVID-19 complications. The hospital admission rate and treatment rate is going up in our community. So it's dangerous and we have to stay vigilant. And I think everybody in public safety is interested in those things as well.
Does it scare you?
Well, me personally, I'm 60. I'm in the high risk category, you know, those kinds of things. I have kids. They're out in the community. How do I keep us safe? And I have as many questions as you do. I have to rest assured in the fact that I'm doing everything that I can to stay safe. I'm trying to stay vigilant and stay informed. Does it scare me? Of course. How could anybody fear the unknown? It's one of the biggest fears. Using good rational judgment and common sense, that is our best approach. We beat this in 1918 in the Spanish flu, and we can beat this too, and we will beat it.
Our guest has been Kaiser Fire District Chief Jeff Cowan. I have a whole three or four more pages here of questions I could ask you. Would you come back and do this again with us?
I'd be delighted.
Because I'd love so many other things I'd love to ask you about, and I know we don't have a lot of time right now. If somebody has some questions, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
My email is chief@kaiserfire.com, and we
have... Stayed up all night thinking that one, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Well, you know, people mispronounce my name, Cowan. I can't spell it, all the other stuff. So most people can spell chief, and so chief@kaiserfire.com is email, goes right to my desk.
Do you answer your mail?
I do answer my email.
You did. Well, when I sent you a thing, you answered it right away, even though you knew who it was.
Yeah, you know, I'm pretty lucky. I have great people around me. They keep an eye on me.
All righty, Chief. Again, thank you. Stay safe. And you guys are doing an awesome job up there in Kaiser. I live in Kaiser. I see you guys out there all the time, and you're just doing an awesome job. Let your crew know that we appreciate them, and please stay safe.
Thanks for the privilege of being on the Terry Saul Show.
We're just about out of time for today's show. Remember, you can catch our show every Saturday at 10 a.m. and a replay Sundays at 6 p.m. right here on Salem's original radio station, KSLM. A reminder, if you missed any of today's show or would like to hear any of my shows, you can always hear a podcast on our official KSLM website at www.kslm.news or on my official website at www.terrysaul.com. If you would like to drop me a note, I'd love to hear from you. My email address is terry@kslm.news. We'll see you next time. Take care and be safe.
You've been listening to The Terry Saul Show on Salem's original radio station, 104.3 FM and 1220 AM KSLM. Today's show is brought to you by the Willamette Queen Sternwheeler. The next time you plan an event, think of the Queen. And by the Lule Group, featuring Lule's Car Connection, Don Lule Holmes, and Teresa Lule's State Farm Insurance. That's a wrap. Thanks, everybody. Good show.
Bye, everybody.